once again to the Game of Thrones podcast on the winteriscoming.net. We are Take the Black, and we're here to talk about episode 5 of season 5, Kill the Boy. And man, it was, to me, one of my favorite episodes of the season, but I haven't talked to my lovely co-host Isis and Luke. Yes, Luke is lovely. I haven't talked to them yet, so I don't know their thoughts. But let me introduce them real quick to you. This is the first time you've listened to our Unsullied podcast. Let me introduce to you Isis. Isis, tell them where they can find you out there and say hello to everyone.
Hey, guys. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is at IJAMELTON. Or you can find me on Tumblr as well. I am superhero-omightyisis. So please.
Go check her stuff out, because if you are into Outlander, or if you like different views of Arrow and different superhero stuff, Isis is the person to give a follow to, because she's really knowledgeable in that area. We also have Luke Turner, the always just up-in-your-face shenanigans causing Luke Turner. Luke, say hi to everybody out there.
Hi to everybody out there.
See, I told you. How you doing, Luke?
I'm doing good. What exactly is a tumbler? Like, other than the one I use to mix my, scotch and whatever.
I was going to say. Well, I mean, I use mine for, tea. I pour tea into my tumbler.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Is it sweetened or unsweetened? Because then I'm going to judge you.
It's actually a Game of Thrones tumbler. It's a House Stark tumbler.
Oh. But it's sweetened tea, right?
I don't drink sweet tea.
Are you serious?
Don't you live in Arkansas?
How can you?
Yeah, I know.
How can you?
That's
live
why
in
my
the
parents
South?
My parents disown me because I don't drink sweet tea.
I'm disowning you now. Shit.
I'm sorry. Listen, my wife and I are healthy people. We drink we take Truvia instead of regular sugar. But.
See, that's where you got that cancer in your head.
You got a Monsanto tumor is what it is.
Everybody knows that Truvia is natural. Truvia is all natural. Thank you very much.
Whatever.
If anything, it's going to give me a superhuman power. Like, I'm going to be like an inhuman or something. You watch.
You wish. No. Tumblr is just it's a blog place where you can go and post your blog, or a lot of people use it for GIFs.
That's where I go for is GIFs.
Yeah. Great. I mean, a lot of people do some really great GIFs over there. A lot of people do fan fiction. It's actually like we're creative people that go to blog, but I'm not creative at all. So all I do is say snarky, funny stuff online. And sometimes people like it. And sometimes I post my articles there from lightlybuzz.com as well. So,
speaking of your snarky comments, let me get what you thought about episode 5, season 5, Kill the Boy. Give me your right off the cuff what you thought about the entire episode.
I actually really liked it. It really, when they were talking about, oh, you have to kill the boy, at first I really thought it was the boy that killed Ygritte. And I was like, oh man, they're going to have to kill the boy. But no, I felt like it was a really great episode to show that, okay, now you have to evolve. And it wasn't just Jon Snow, or I guess we can still call him Jon Snow. But it was also Danny as well. I mean, these people have to evolve. These people in leadership, have to evolve. Same thing with Tyrion. He couldn't just stay being his snarky self and being ugly. Very rarely do you see him apologize for stuff, but he was apologetic, and he wanted to make amends and kind of work with Jorah a little bit.
I kind of feel like he and Sir Friendzone had a nice little moment there.
They did. He could have let him die. I mean,
I kind of feel like I'm starting to like Sir Friendzone again. Like, I liked him in the first season, even though I knew what kind of person he was. But I've hated him ever since, and now they make me feel sorry for him. So I kind of like him again.
Penis is gonna fall off.
Whoa. It's not spread that far yet. It's only on his arm. My God.
Well, it's going to turn. His whole body is going to turn into that. So
he's going to be a stone man,
it
looks like.
He's going to be a stone man. He's going to have stone balls.
Oh, my God. Do you think people actually, farm the stone men's genitalia and, sell it in, open markets and stuff? There's probably a market for it.
I don't put anything past Martin. I really don't.
I don't either. Luke, let me ask you, what were your thoughts on the episode far, and what did you think of the Stone Men?
I didn't know what the Stone Men were at first. I thought they were literally made of stone. So I was like, how are these guys swimming? Like, I was like, why aren't these, like, how did he get up in the boat? He should be down at the bottom. But I guess they're not actually stone men, as we.
Well, that's what grayscale makes you look like. It takes over your entire body and basically, I guess, what's the word for it? Mortifies your flesh. Is it mortify? Something like that. Anyway, it turns your flesh hardened. You don't feel anything. I was very happy with the stone men in this episode because, to me, that's how I imagined them when I read the books. So I was pretty happy with that, but I didn't mean to interrupt you. Continue. So you didn't know what the stone men were, even though they foreshadowed the grayscale, and Stannis mentioned that he almost dropped Shireen off at the stone men in Valyria.
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew what it was, but I didn't realize, like, when it happened, because they were talking about pirates, like 2 seconds before that. So that's what I thought they were. And then I noticed that they were like some kind of zombie looking things. But the episode itself was better than last week, but I still really didn't feel like a whole heck of a lot happened. Like, none of the storylines really got pushed too far. I mean, more than last episode, but not a whole lot.
So, Isis, what did you think whenever they were talking about Targaryens all alone out there in the world is a sad thing, and then all of a sudden they pan up? And there's Jon Snow.
I thought the same thing that everybody else thought, that wow, there's some foreshadowing going on here, and maybe that's why the Maester has Aemon has taken Jon Snow under his wing, because he knows the real story, what we think as fans, TV show watching fans, that we think Jon Snow is a Targaryen, or had this, you know, where his parentaging for, I can't even talk today.
His
parents, who his parents really are. And so I really feel like he's really trying to look out for him and protect him in a way, because at the end of the day, you know, Jon Snow could have left with Stannis and could have, you know, went out with him and everything. And the fact that he decided that he was going to go ahead and stay was enough for the Maester to go and say, okay, I'm going to help you out.
Right.
I'm going to take care of you.
Speaking of Stannis, did you like the fact that Stannis turned into a grammar Nazi this episode?
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my
that
God.
Brought so much joy into my life. It made me – it just kind of gave a little different dimension of him of, you know, he – of course, he's this no-nonsense kind of person, and it just kind of falls in line to the type of person that he is. And I just absolutely loved him.
It was so great to hear. They've really made Stannis – a much more likable, almost lovable character. I hate to say a word like lovable and Stannis in the same sentence, but like that moment he had last episode where he hugged his daughter, and then this episode where he's talking about, you know, like he's in there and he's all smart aleck and he talks about, you know, it's fewer instead of less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just, oh my God, they are really pushing Stannis on us, I feel like, which, my God, anytime they push a character, there's never
good.
Never good. That does not portend good things for them. But, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know how Stannis' story is going to end. And this season has got me kind of twisted. Luke, let me ask you this. You mentioned that it wasn't your favorite episode, that it kind of moved slow, and the stories didn't get pushed forward. Do you feel that way because there wasn't really any action in the show this season, this episode?
Yeah, there was a little bit of action when they were with the stone
men
and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of talking, you know, cut to Brienne and Pod, you know, doing nothing again.
That's why, right there. Isis, that's why he hated the episode.
No, I didn't hate the episode. I mean, she had a really good idea to have, you know, Sansa, you know, when she's in immediate danger, to hit pause, run to the highest abandoned place that's probably like 3 miles, at least 4 or 5 miles from where she was, and then light a candle, so that she could see it from there, you know, it just leave it there, because the wind and all that kind of stuff isn't going to blow a candle out.
Now, here's the thing, though. I don't think that lady has necessarily talked to Brienne yet, because she told Sansa that the North remembers 2 episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that she's talked to Brienne yet. I honestly believe that there is a contingency in the North that hates the Boltons and would rally around a Stark in Winterfell, which is, There's always been a Stark in Winterfell, except for whenever it burned down and was sacked by the Boltons at the very end of the Ironborn. So I think the North would rally around a Stark, especially a firstborn daughter like Sansa, and doubly especially if she was married to another family from the North that was considered an honorable family.
And I guess word got out that they have now a giant on their hands that they can use. So I guess that makes sense.
To put the candle in the window. Is that giant you're talking about?
No, Brienne the giant.
Is that what?
Yeah.
He's such a dick. I swear.
Why do you hate things that are good?
I will say though that I did like her little speech that she had when she was when she talked to the innkeep, talking about like, you know, I serve her mom, and that doesn't just because she's dead doesn't mean that I'm.
Absolved of it, yeah.
Absolved from my oath, and you know, and all that.
I served her, and I serve her still.
Yeah, so yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. Sort.
Yeah, some tinfoil hat theorists out there are believing that was a foreshadowing for a certain character making an appearance in the next episode. I don't think that's going to happen, Lady Stoneheart. But
Lady Stoneheart.
Yes. So we have, like, let me ask you this, and Isis and Luke, I want to get both your theories on this or your thoughts. Isis, I want to ask you first. What did you think? Do you like Ramsay because of the actor? Does he make Ramsay a likable character?
Well, since I have not read the books, I don't know how Ramsay is in the book. But let me tell you, this guy is awesome at being wicked. I mean, there are some people that you go ahead and you go, man, I don't want to root for you, but you are great at being bad. I think the guy that played the Tony Soprano was a good one. You know, there have been others that HBO has done. They've done really, really good job with having really bad people, and then sometimes you're rooting for them. But I'm not going to lie, seeing the reaction between his dad and him, especially when his dad was telling him he was going to have another baby and, you know, they suspect it was a boy, you almost felt bad for him because he has done everything his father has asked him to do without question. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say that he disliked it. He had immense joy out of doing these horrible, horrible things. But, you know, he did all these things and really expecting nothing but maybe some, you know, hey, that was great, boy, or whatever. But then to be called his son, his heir, if you will, has been a huge thing for him. And for that to be possibly taken away from him, I could feel his pain, like, oh, wait a minute. I could just, you know, be kind of moved to the side here in a minute.
But that look on Sansa's face, though, whenever he said
that,
it was like,
smirked.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, I mean, she all but went like, ooh, yay, and it was...
She all but went, eat a dick!
Yeah, there you go. And it was just really interesting, and then at that moment, I mean, not that I want him to get married to Sansa, maybe she deserves a little bit of it, but the fact that, you know, he was about to be kind of moved to the side, but I loved when he was talking to his dad, when he was like... So, like, how did this happen? And then
how are you able to find it?
I know. Yeah. I am not going to lie. That made me laugh. That was probably my favorite interaction of the night, was them talking about that. Like, how did you find it?
Yeah, and that was hilarious. And that story that Roose gave about the basically he raped Ramsay's mother, that was, I mean, in the book he talks about, he uses the word rape, but I'm sure they're trying to stay away from using the word rape since the whole Jaime and Cersei incident in the Sept of Baelor. Luke, let me ask you this. There's kind of a nice parallel, like Stannis had his episode, or his moment last episode where he had a father-daughter moment. In this episode, it was Roose and Ramsay, and we know that Stannis is marching on Winterfell, so Bolton versus... Bolton versus Stannis, you know, Baratheon. So, like, we're about to get a major rumble in the North. Did you feel like it was a great father and son moment between Roose and Ramsay? Did you have talks like that when you were with your dad as a kid?
I'm afraid of this answer.
I know. I was cringing when I asked that question.
No. Yeah. That. That. It's funny because you mentioned when we were talking about Stannis earlier, like both of these guys are pretty much complete dicks, right? Like the whole time they've been nothing but just complete a-holes. except when Stannis has the father's daughter talk with his daughter, you actually like felt that he was genuine. But when Roose yeah. did it, I was like, I don't believe anything that you're saying right now. Like, not even a little bit do I believe what you're saying.
Totally. No, like, you never trust Roose Bolton, ever, for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't feel anything. I mean, it worked. Now he's got, what's-his-face, you know, at least not thinking about the baby, but
What a dirty move.
I know. Well, here's what popped into my head was, as soon as he mentioned the baby, I was like, that poor woman and her child are dead. Like, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, she's going to accidentally get stabbed in the stomach, or she's going to get pushed down some stairs or whatever.
Yep.
I was like, she's
gone. She's going to get stabbed in the stomach a la Stark style?
Oh.
Ooh, was that low? Was that mean?
The Lannisters send their regards.
Yeah.
No, you know, Fat Walda, and I'm not being mean, that's what they call her in the books. They call her Walda in the show. Her name is Fat Walda in the books. Roose Bolton makes his marriage pact with Walder Frey, and Walder Frey says, pick any one of my daughters, and you can have her weight in gold. So naturally, Roose picks the heaviest daughter to marry so he can have her weight in gold. And then he gets her pregnant to piss off his son, Ramsay. And honestly, it's more of like a power play. You know, like, he wants Ramsay to be on his toes, and Ramsay's one of those guys that, left unchecked, could start getting a big head about things and considering himself to be the Warden of the North and the head of House Bolton, where his father is, and his father could be replaced, because they're Boltons, and they would kill each other. In the books, Roose Bolton kills, not Roose, but Ramsay kills his, he has brothers from Roose, and he kills them. And Roose has killed his own children. Like, it's just a thing. The Boltons are just horrible, god-awful people. And honestly, the only Boltons I even know about are Roose and Ramsay, because the rest of them are dead. Because they're just like, oh, I don't like you. You're too weak. I think I'll throw you in the river, or I'll hang you, or I'll smother you in your sleep, or I'll kill you, feed you to my dogs. So, yeah.
So what did you think about Reek coming into play now? Like, they actually...
That was a great scene, that moment where Sansa walked into the dog kennel. That kind of happens a little bit, but of course not with Sansa, but a reveal of Reek. He sleeps with the dogs, actually sleeps in their cages with them, and they all kind of – he lays with them for warmth because he's out in the cold in the winter. And so he sleeps with the dogs for warmth, and when they feed the dogs, he shares their food. And so – they're called Ramsay's bitches, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
In the book, the dogs are called Ramsay's bitches, and he names each one of them for a girl that he's killed. So, like, if he's killed a certain girl, he'll name his new dog by the girl's name he killed. Especially if he hunted them well, if they ran far away and he was able to hunt them, he'll name them. Anyway, when Reek Theon is in the cage and somebody comes to get him, he's eating a rat. He's like actually has bitten into a live rat and is eating his warm blood and his entrails out of his stomach as the rat is squirming in his hands because Reek hasn't been fed in months and months and months. Now in the show, he's able to walk around the yard in Winterfell, which I'm sure he gets his own food somewhere somehow. So I thought it was a good reveal to Sansa, and I remember I told you guys last week I thought that she knew.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she knew he was there, but I was completely wrong. And she hasn't forgiven him yet, which I don't know how he's going to get her to trust him. I kind of feel like he's got to do something for Sansa to trust him, because how are they going to work together at the end of the season, which I hope that happens. I mean, how else is Ramsay and Roose going to be taken down, except from taken down from the outside by Stannis or from the inside by Sansa, so... I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I thought it was a good play together. Like, Sansa and Theon are back together. Ramsay's there talking shit. The whole Fat Walda's pregnant thing and Roose being a dick. I thought the Winterfell scenes were great. Let me ask you this. What did you think of the love story that between Grey Worm and Missandei?
Look, there was no one that was cheering more than me. I was like, yes, girl, yes, kiss that man, because he is still alive, okay? I mean, he doesn't have anything down there. It's all right. But as long as his lips work, you in business, okay? So, no, seriously, I was really excited about it because, you know, she really kind of put herself out there and really kind of went, look, you know, he said, look, I was really afraid because I wasn't going to have you anymore. And I was afraid of that. And that gave her the courage to kind of go ahead and say, make the first move, really physically make the first move. So I thought it was wonderful. I was so excited for them to, for those two.
As a book purist, my first natural instinct is to rail against the show and say that the Unsullied don't have feelings. But I like how they explained it, that he's fallen in love with Missandei, and he actually was afraid he would never see the woman he's fallen in love with again. And so that made him weak in battle, because honestly, an Unsullied is basically a godlike warrior. They don't feel pain, they don't feel fear. And he allowed that love for Missandei to get in his way. And he felt like that was a weakness, and he was ashamed for it. Luke, what did you think of that? Do you think that did that endear Grey Worm to you? I mean, I already liked Grey Worm. I didn't need to be endeared to Grey Worm anymore. But did it make you like him even more, or did you kind of get pissed that they're making a love story out of nothing?
Well, yeah. I mean, first I felt bad for him because he finds out that the hot chick likes him, and there's literally nothing he can do about it.
There's one thing he can do. There's two things. I can think of two things he can do about it. All right?
I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about him.
That'll be for Wiki Westeros.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is true. This is wrong podcast for that.
I don't know if he's... Wrong podcast. You know, sometimes they say amputees get, like, phantom pains and stuff. So, I mean, I was feeling bad for the brother. But I was
phantom erection.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of with you, and we talked about it last time. I liked his character, and I liked all of the Unsullied better when they had no feelings, like when they were just uber badass ultra warriors who didn't care about anything. I mean, I guess I get it. You know, they've never experienced love before. In fact, the opposite. Right. You know, so when she shows some sort of affection, I guess it would make him, you know, it would be that much more intense, but right. I don't know.
Here's what's creepy. In the book, she's like 7 or 8.
Oh, no. Don't tell me things like this.
He went Twilight on
him? I don't read the book.
Well, he doesn't like her in the books. He doesn't even look at her. He's an Unsullied. He doesn't have feelings in the books.
I thought...
That's where I was... Yeah, no, that's where my book purist side kicks in, and I have to go, okay, am I going to take this with a grain of salt and say... You know what? This is the show. The show's the show. The books are the books. But yeah, in the books, she's like 7 or 8. I think 13 tops, but I think she's like 7 or 8. She's really young. But Grey Worm doesn't even recognize, like, he knows who she is. They talk. But it's only because they share a common bond that she has two brothers that are Unsullied. And so he knows them because he's the leader of the Unsullied. There's no romantic link between the two.
Well, I'm just going to say that I was just glad to see first that he was alive, because I was worried about that. I thought I had a feeling he was still alive, but I was kind of worried about it. So I'm glad that he is alive. But for him and homegirl to, you know, kind of kiss to be affectionate and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I still say that, you know, there was some hope with that relationship. So
no, I'm you know what, honestly, again, stepping aside from the Nazi book purist that I am with Game of Thrones, I really enjoyed that alteration from the books, because it's TV, and you can't translate thousands of pages of a book into 10 hours a year, 10 episodes a season. You can't do that.
Well,
so you have to streamline, and you have to make certain alterations, and making a love story out of what is already there, like Missandei's a beautiful woman in the show. Grey Worm's a single dude with no cock and balls, but that's okay, because you know you don't have to have all the package there to love somebody. So you know, obviously that's how Grey Worm's gonna do things now. And you know what, you gotta make a, sometimes it's television, you make a love story because you need to appeal to a certain audience. Like, yeah, if Game of Thrones only appealed to book readers, it would be a very, very boring show. I promise you that. So you know, I'm glad that that deviation was made.
Well, not only that, but, you know, a lot of these relationships are, in especially in Game of Thrones, are so forced. They're getting married, and we'll look at Dany here in a minute. They're made for these marriages, or relationships are made for alliances and things like that. I don't, you know, the only ones that I can really remember are like Jon Snow and Ygritte were actually, you know, came together and had a relationship. Well, I guess, you know, a relationship, but it was made out of love. It wasn't made out of, you know, like, hey,
that's a really good point.
We have
that's
to really be, you know, we have to be together because you're the queen of this and I'm the king of this, or whatever the case may be. And I feel the same way with Grey Worm and his girl. It's a relation, and you need that, because when you have so many relationships built out of such ugliness, you need to have, like, okay, here's a little glimmer of hope, a little glimmer of light, especially when you're watching such a show like, you know, this one.
Well, you know, and it's funny, though, too, like, that contrast between those types of relationships, you could tell that, I guess, R.R. Martin's against it, because in every time that I can think of that happens, where they choose love over what they should have done, everybody dies.
Rob Stark being one of the ones.
Right,
who
yeah.
Chose
well, same thing. Ygritte's dead. Yeah. Jon Snow probably should be dead. Rob Stark is dead, plus his mom and his... Mm-hmm.
Oberyn Martell, yes. Who loved Elaria Dorne.
Same thing, you know.
Elaria Dorne. So yeah, basically that's the same thing. You choose love, you die.
Littlefinger. What's her face at the Vale?
Lysa.
Yeah, she loved him.
That's true. She loved.
That didn't
she
work.
Loved him. Yeah, manically.
Tyrion.
Yeah, no.
And his little hoe.
Tyrion and his whore, yeah. Shay.
Love
absolutely.
Has no place in Westeros.
in the Seven Kingdoms.
Make a really good point.
Yeah, it's in the Seven Kingdoms. It just doesn't belong.
So, Isis, you brought up a good point about Dany and Hisdar Zolorak, which, or I think it's Lorak. I just call him Hisdar Foshizzi.
Foshizzi.
Foshizzi. She, before we talk about her demanding that he marries her, and the fact that that doesn't happen that way in the books, but whatever, I don't care. You're streamlining the show, you're making it faster. Okay, let's talk about that badass dragon scene. Oh my god, can we please say that the Mother of Dragons is back?
Yes, the Mother of Dragons is back, and about time. I'm so glad that she took Dario's Nohaini, I'm going to call him that now.
Dario Nohaini.
Yeah, Dario Nohaini.
That's so perfect.
And so, you know, she took his advice, and I was so thrilled about it. I mean, and then we pan over later on, and we see the other dragon with Mr. What's his name? What do we call him? Yeah, Sir Friendzone. And
oh, yeah, Drogon's flyover was chill.
Oh,
that caused chill.
It was awesome. That was awesome. But I felt like, okay, good. She has finally made a statement, you know. And I love the fact, and this is so bad, that the dragons, they actually shared the food. Did you see that they tore him in
yeah.
two?
They ripped him in half.
They ripped
blood
him
in half. Was still...
Yes.
Yeah,
so,
that was
like,
crazy.
I thought that was awesome because I was like, oh, sharing means caring. And so they shared their barbecue together.
I felt like it was a great Mother's Day present from Dany to them, like a mother giving her children a Mother's Day present.
I know. It was so awesome. Like, she's like, I'm embracing who you are. And you know, kind of like, I'm sorry for what I have done, and I'm embracing who you are. So here's
but now your... they've got the taste of human flesh now. So it's like,
well,
what?
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that whole scene was amazing, amazing. I was left a little bit baffled about her decision to, you know, kind of marry this guy and everything. I was just like,
this simpering wimp that's on his knees crying.
Yeah, like a little biatch. And I was just like, really, Dany? Really? After having a manly man of your first husband, this is who you choose as a second husband. So I can only...
She married for love. She married, like, Luke's point stands. She married for love the first time, and look what happened to Khal Drogo. So now she's marrying for reasons of politics. And in the books, it takes, like, half the book. It's meandering. It's a plot line that I don't care for because it takes forever. And she's basically... Of course, nobody forces her to do it, but she's basically left with no decision left, because the Sons of the Harpy destroy the city and kill everybody. And so Hizzy Froshizzy tells her that I'll make the Sons of the Harpy stop attacking for 90 days, and if that happens, then you'll marry me, and I'll become the king of the city, and you'll become the queen. That happens. She opens up the pits, just like in the show. But in the show, she gets rid of all that shit, and she just says, I need a suitor, and I find one on his knees. You're a respectable suitor on your knees. So, like, I like that they're asserting Danny's badass dominance. Like, Luke, I have to ask you this. Like, you had to, like, I don't know, man. I thought it was completely badass that she was pushing dudes up, and she was, like, she was taunting them, basically, and you know, and when she fed that one guy the dragons, we don't know if he was guilty. What did you think of that scene?
I liked it a lot. I especially liked, like, how much thought they put into it. Like, if you notice, when the guy gets lit on fire, the whole lighting changes in the thing. Like, I was like, man, it all of a sudden got bright. And I was like, oh, yeah, there's a guy on fire.
There's a literal
off camera. Yeah, I was like, oh, that makes sense. They really put a lot of thought and detail into this. This is great. I can only imagine, like, them out there with, like, some sort of, like, wooden dummy, you know, out there, like, lighting it on fire. Like, is this going to be enough light? Maybe we should have her sacrifice two dudes.
Did you notice the other guys, like, instantly got on their knees and were begging for their lives after that? Like, she was taunting Sir Hizzy, or not Sir, she was taunting Hizzy. And the rest of the guys got on their knees and were basically praying, supplicant to her, begging her for their lives. And she says that line, well, I think they've had enough to eat for now.
We don't want to overfeed them.
Well, they're like lizards that, you know, if they, once they've had enough, they'll just leave the food there.
I guess.
Yeah.
That makes sense, I guess. That's science. Hashtag science.
On Game of Thrones, take the
dragon
black.
Dragon science.
Dragon science.
But I feel bad for bad for Dario Nohaini. What does that mean for him? I mean, is he
he'll still
think he's still going to be hitting that shit?
Yeah, I don't think she's going to ever go to bed. That's why she picked him specifically as the one to marry, because he's on his knees sniveling, thinking he's going to die. So, you know, she marries him, and then that's it. You know,
they're not going to consummate the wedding?
I think they actually may consummate once, and she's very turned off by him. In fact, she calls him his Dar of the Tepid Kiss. So, like, she doesn't like him, and she's had Dario on the books, so she knows what hot lovemaking can be like, and of course she's had Khal Drogo. So she knows how to have sex the right way and enjoy it, and his Dar, basically, he's a rich, pompous, arrogant ass, and he doesn't know how to work magic in the boudoir. I don't know how they're going to do it on the show, but for now, Dario's totally still in play.
He should be. I would think so. But imagine
Dario Nohaini.
Imagine the roller coaster of emotions for that guy. It's like he's standing there in the chambers, you know, and then the immense fear, whatever, when he gets taken away, when he's like, oh, well, I'm one of the leaders of the family. He gets taken away. And then she comes back for him. He's like, oh, maybe she's going to let me out. Nope, dragons.
Dragon.
Down again. You know, then he's thinking that he's going to die. Then, oh, no, I get to live. You know, and then, oh, wait a minute. Now I get this, too.
Now I get to become the king of Meereen. Yeah. Awesome.
So.
Yeah, I don't know how the show's going to do it. Obviously, they're going to fast track that whole storyline, which I'm okay with that, because that's one of the biggest complaints from a lot of the book readers is that A Dance with Dragons, the last book that Martin published, was a little bit meandering and a little too long in the tooth for a book. So, yeah, no, that storyline was a great storyline. I'm impressed with how they made Danny a badass again. I hope they continue it. But we had that action go down, but the real big scene and the big finale for the episode is Tyrion and Sir Friendzone, Sir Jorah. And I kind of am not going to call him Sir Friendzone for a while because I feel sorry for him, but whatever. Sir Jorah and Tyrion are in the boat. They have a moment together. They kind of quote a poem together. And then the wind picks up. And honestly, yeah, seeing Drogon flap by, and I turned my volume up to like 90 on that scene. And he flaps by, and you hear his wings like hitting the air. But it's Tyrion's face that gave me the chills, because you have to understand, that's the first time Tyrion has seen a dragon. So he's always wanted to see one since he was a child. He's read about them. He's an expert on dragons because he's read about them. He's never seen one. So he almost pees himself when he sees Drogon fly over. And then Ser Jorah sees Drogon, but he hasn't seen him that large before. Drogon was not that big last time he saw him. He was big, but he wasn't that big. And so I thought that scene was probably, besides the dragons eating that one dude, that was probably the best scene of the episode so far. Would you agree, Isis, or not?
No, I think it was, I'm going to have to go back with, you know, seeing the dragons tear apart the meal and everything, and then barbecue.
I respect that.
Yeah, that to me was like awesome, because I totally respected the dragons. They weren't like, hey, you know, the body was closer to me, and so I get all of it. No, it's like, here you go, brother. I'm gonna give you some. And it was
you like them
because
they shared. You like
yeah,
them
I know.
They shared. Yeah,
sharing,
yeah. They're friendly dragons.
These are the values that I teach my children at home.
Exactly, it's a code. I mean, I respect that, and then the fact that they, you know, want cooked food. I mean, I get that. So, don't get me wrong. The faces.
They're not savages.
They're not. They have, I mean, again, a code. But I did enjoy, like you said, the look on their faces, the look of Tyrion, of the shocked look on his face, of like, oh my God, what did I just is this real life? And that was incredible. And it was kind of like Jorah was smiling because how he saw how big the dragon had gotten. And it was kind of like, it was like kind of seeing Dany again for him. You know, it's a piece of Dany. And so that's
He's been there with the dragon since they were hatched.
Yes.
He's known them since they were little bitty cat sized dragons.
And I have to feel like he thinks, hey, I'm close to her, because the dragons would be close to her. So
that's a good point.
That's just
So Luke, let me ask you this. What did you think about Jorah dragging Tyrion up on the shore? And they seem like they're going to be friends now. Like, he's calling him Tyrion instead of Imp. Which, if you don't like Tyrion, you call him Imp. But if you're his friend, you call him Tyrion. So he's calling him Tyrion. He rescues him, first of all. Like, he could have let Tyrion drown. And by the way, that was a nice little nod to book readers, because Tyrion falls in the water, is dragged down by a stone man who is sinking himself. And then it goes black. And I thought they were going to end the episode. And my wife was watching it, you know, and I was doing the Winter is Coming live tweeting. And I stopped what I was doing, and I looked at the TV, and my wife goes, oh, no, they didn't. Oh, no, they're not going to do that to us. And I was like, baby, welcome to the wonderful world of being a fan of the books, because they did that to the books. Tyrion falls down in the water, and that's the last thing you see of him. Like, he sinks to the bottom, and he that's the end of the chapter for, like, 3 or 4 chapters before you read another Tyrion chapter again. So for like 3 or 4 chapters, you're going, oh my God, Tyrion's dead. How can he do this? How could he kill Tyrion? But no, like, and then of course he wakes, you know, we have the wake up scene with Jorah. Luke, what did you think about the grayscale reveal that Jorah's got grayscale? Are you feeling kind of bad for him, or are you just like, I'm so tired of Sir Friendzone, he needs to go ahead and go?
I'm kind of tired of him, to be honest. And by the way, the fade to black thing, that was a long behind black scene. Just
yeah,
like, I literally turned to my wife and go, why did the TV go off? Because I was waiting for the credits, and nothing came. And I was like, did the TV turn off?
That's why I'm saying it was a nice nod to book readers, because that's how we felt when we read the book for the first time. It's like, what? Oh my God! So you're like, either you're flipping forward trying to find the next Tyrion chapter, or you're like, okay, I don't want to spoil myself. I'll just keep reading until I find out if he's dead or not.
Yeah. No, I really don't care that he's got the, I guess the Esteros version of herpes, but I could care less. I mean, again, you know, back to my earlier point, the only reason why he's going to see Dany is because he loves her, and this is what happens to him. So.
Well, you already mentioned that the stone man, you kind of were like, you kind of didn't know what was coming when it happened, and you were like, what are these guys and whatnot. But Isis, I didn't get your opinion. Did it freak you out when that guy stood up in the background? Did you go like, oh my God? Because I was watching it and I knew what was happening, because I knew what was coming. Like, I dissected the preview trailer last week. I dissected it screen by screen, making GIFs, and I saw the guy stand up in the background, and I got freaked out.
Well,
last night watching it, and I was like, oh my God. And my wife, like, Melissa screamed. She's like, ah!
Yeah. So, no, I freaked out too. I was just like, I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, I saw like a little blurb and I was like, what the hell's going on here? And then like, I saw all these, you know, bodies coming you know, falling in the water and everything. And I was just like, what is just going on here? I mean, they're getting attacked. I mean, are these wild? I mean, I didn't know what was going on. And then when they got in the boat and I saw their faces and their skin, I was like, oh, okay, gotcha. I know.
You're like, oh, snap, I know what
it is. It's on like Donkey Kong. And then when he said, Joro was like, don't let him touch you. And I was just like, holy crap, you can just get this shit by getting touched? I was like, oh.
Their version of grayscale can be transferred through contact. Like, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. It's not even really clear in the books how grayscale is transferred. Jorah is taking the place of another book character. This book character has not been shown on the show. So I'm not even going to talk about him. So Jorah is taking his place, and he contracts grayscale basically the same way the other guy in the books did. And
but that's not
really
the
sure.
way that Stannis' daughter got contracted grayscale.
No, she got it through that rotten doll that was given to her as a child. But so grayscale it thrives in like wet, damp places like mold. That's where it thrives. So that's where grayscale comes from. Well, there's an active type of grayscale that those stone men have. Like it starts in your, you know, in your extremities, and once your extremities go, then it goes into your chest and it hardens your arteries, and that's when you're done. So I don't understand really what's going to happen to Jorah now that he's got a spot on his arm. There's lots of talk that he could cut his arm off and stop the progression. That's happened. They talk about in the books people could cut off extremities and stop the progression. But it doesn't look like he's going to do that. To me, the look on his face when he saw it was like a look of resolve, like, I need to go ahead and fulfill my mission and get Tyrion to Dany.
Yes, absolutely. I cannot wait for, and I'm secretly hoping that Tyrion is going to get there before she has a chance to marry the other guy, the guy that was on his knees. He's Ifoshizi. I'm really hoping, like, I'm like, please, please, please let this happen, because I really, really want to throw a rent. Not that I don't want her to marry somebody. I want Dany to be happy, but I don't want her for Dany to marry some dude just, you know, like, for political reasons. I want her to marry him because, like, she wants to. She wants to be all up in that. So
right. You want to marry for love. Yeah. And you want her to die because she chose love.
There you go. Well, no, the guy can die. She can live. The guy can die.
Oh, Dario Nohaini.
Well, I don't want her to marry him. That can be her little boy toy. I'm good with that.
All right. So that's the end of the episode. We saw a preview for next episode, and it looks like much like episode 5, where we spent time with Winterfell and Dany and Jon Snow at the Wall, it looks like next episode is going to be exclusively in King's Landing and Dorne. So we're going to see probably Jaime and Bronn go to the Water Gardens. We're going to see Ilaria and the Sand Snakes do some more plotting. Hopefully it'll be a better scene than their intro scene last episode. We're going to see Cersei being more devious in King's Landing. The return of the Queen of Thorns, Lady Olenna Tyrell.
Oh, she's
awesome.
And
it looks like we're gonna get Loras on trial. Alright, well guys, that's the end of our show for this week. We appreciate you listening. Make sure that you tune in next week when we talk about episode 6. Make sure you tweet us if you have any questions at hashtag take the black. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at @House_Razor. You can find my articles on winteriscoming.net. I have my two lovely co-hosts, Isis. You can find her on Twitter at
IJAMELTON, or you can find me on Tumblr, superhero-omightyisis.
And you can find my other lovely co-host, Luke, on Twitter at TurnerLuke. So are you proud of me, Luke? And I didn't have to ask you for it.
Yeah, I did it. And I actually just tweeted #TakeTheBlack.
Not going back to future questions.
I didn't ask a question. I just tweeted #TakeTheBlack. That's the way hashtags work, right?
That's right. You just randomly hashtag something.
That's what I did. I #TakeTheBlack. Winter is coming to take the black.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Love you.